I did what I could. When I saw the theft begin, I ran to the early days of the Age of Iron, and from there I ran back to the late days, pulling the threads of history as I came. In the first ages of Time City, this should have summoned powerful help from the folk of the city. But the allotted span of the city is ending, and it made my power to summon weak. Only you two answered the summons.
This made Sam and Jonathan give one another self-conscious looks.
So then, the Guardian's thin voice muttered on, I surrounded the thief in the threads of history and wrapped them round any who would help in the Age of Iron to drag them together. And all who came was one girl. And the three of you arrived too late.
The long face looked desperately sad. And why did you come here? Vivian asked.
I did not know what else to do, the Guardian admitted. When the iron casket leaves its hiding place, the Age of Iron ends and I must return to the city. So here I came to Time City, hoping that my casket had been restored to its place in the Gnomon. But it is not there. It has been stolen.
We know. We didn't do any good at all, Jonathan said. He was so worried that he almost looked like Semperturn Walker. Look, is Time City really coming to an end? Isn't there anything we can do? The Guardian gazed at him sadly.
It is moving into its last days. The great year is nearly ended, yes. But if the guardians of the other three caskets could be warned, and the silver, the gold, and the lead brought to the Gnomon safe from the thief, then the first days might come again.
Then we'll do... Jonathan began, but Vivian interrupted him eagerly. Who is that thief? She said. The Time Lady? The Guardian's long pale face turned to her in a look of utter reproach. He shook his head, slowly and sadly, and faded away while he did it, into the wall of the archway. They were left looking at rows of narrow red bricks, with an afterimage of a sad, long-legged shape against them. Vivian could have kicked herself. She felt hot and cold and weak in the legs, the way you do when you've said something perfectly dreadful. She wished she had known that it was a dreadful thing to say. Meanwhile, Jonathan was crunching his pigtail between his teeth, and still looking as anguished as his father, and Sam seemed to be holding his breath. He let it out in a sort of roar.
Don't just stand there. Do something.
Yes, but we'll have to think how to first, Jonathan said. He began to walk out through Aeon Square, frowning and chewing his pigtail. Vivian went after him. She could tell by the flapping of shoelace that Sam was just behind. If that really was the Guardian of the Iron Casket, and not another student joke, Jonathan said.
No, it was too sad, Vivian said. And too real.
Then things aren't the way we thought, said Jonathan.
And that boy's not got anything to do with the Time Lady, Sam said. So get on and think. It's your sort of idea we need now.
Jonathan turned and snapped. I am thinking, but my mind needs to adjust first. Besides, do you know where the other caskets are? Have you any way of knowing which bit of thousands of years of history is the Golden Age or the Age of Lead? No, I thought you hadn't, so shut up. He marched on across the square with Vivian, followed by heavy breathing and expressive flapping of shoelaces.
But, of course, they all had to gather round Faber John Stone in the middle. Jonathan stared down at a whole new spiderweb of cracks spreading out from the new cracks of yesterday. "I think Time City really is in its last days," he said miserably. "What do we do? How do we find those other guardians?"
"I have a bit of an idea,"
Vivian said hesitantly. Jonathan whirled round on her, and Sam jerked his chin up to stare at her. She felt rather a fool.
"Well, if the 20th century is part of the Age of Iron," she said, "and I suppose it must be if the iron casket was stolen from it, then it's part of an unstable era, isn't it? Don't you think the other three ages might be unstable eras too?"
She squatted down and spread Dr. Willander's horseshoe-shaped chart out on the fractured stone. She knew it quite appallingly well by now, the long white stretches and the shorter grey ones. And, as she remembered, the grey blocks were very evenly spaced through history, as if they had been made that way on purpose. It was the first time in her life that she had found learning anything even remotely useful.
"Look,"
she said. Jonathan unclenched his teeth from his pigtail and knelt down to look.
"But there are eight other unstable eras."
"Six of them are little ones, only 100 years or so," Vivian said.
"Only three long ones," Sam said, breathing windily across them. He was lying on his stomach, with his chin almost on the chart.
"And those are all about 30 centuries apart," Jonathan said. "I never realized before."
He put his finger on the third unstable era, 5,700 to 6,580.
"Then this could be the Silver Age, if that comes next after the Age of Iron, and..."
His finger moved round to the last long grey block.
"This could be either the Age of Lead or the Age of Gold. But that means the Fourth Age has to be one of the short ones. Anyway, it's worth looking at the Third and the Ninth Unstable Era. What is it? 92nd century to 100th?
They were interrupted by a loud bell ringing from duration. The last few children were running hard across the bottom of Aeon Square.
"Oh, great time," Jonathan said. "I've never been this late before."
They scrambled up. Vivian scooped up the chart and folded it as they raced over the flagstones. They were going to be late. The bell had stopped long before they got to duration.
"You've got it, V.S.," Jonathan panted as they ran. "But we're going to need help finding out which age is which. Let's pump Willander."
School was not so bad for Vivian that morning, even though she arrived late. Probably it was because she knew what to expect now. She spent quite a lot of time using her pen function to draw long-legged men in tall, squashy hats, and thinking about the poor, sad guardian of the iron casket. She wondered what a person who was not quite real spent his time doing in the city. Fading in and out, looking for help, she supposed. So it hadn't been a student joke after all. Then she thought about what the guardian had said. It sounded as if he couldn't tackle the thief himself. Perhaps he was too ghostly now that Time City was coming to the end of its days. So he had caused a wave of chaos in the 20th century, and the history before it, trying to get help. And all that must have happened was that Sam's father and Time Patrol wasted their time hunting him. "We ought to tell them about the thief," Vivian thought uneasily. The Guardian seemed to think that the thief was going on to steal all the caskets, or polarities, or whatever. And that could be right. Why steal only one if you could time travel the way that boy could?
He was probably travelling towards the Silver Age at this very moment. But as Jonathan had pointed out, if he and Vivian and Sam told anyone about it, they would be in trouble, and no one listened to Jonathan's hints. Almost the only thing they could do was to do what the Guardian wanted and go and warn the other Guardians themselves. They could do that if the time egg worked properly. But they had to know where to go first. Jonathan was right. They would have to get Dr. Willander to tell them this afternoon. She expected that Jonathan would want to rush off early to Dr. Willander, so she was very surprised not to see him at all during the lunch break. At 12:35 by her belt clock, there was still no sign of him. Vivian waited a few more minutes, and then tore herself away from the eager crowd who wanted to hear more about the war. Very nervously, she set out for Perpetuum on her own. Jonathan was in the grassy space with the statues outside Continuum. He was leaning against a vast statue of a woman without any arms, talking eagerly to one of the students. It was the young man who had offered beer money for a film of the Guardian interrupting the ceremony. Vivian remembered the short white kilt and the young man's brawny legs beneath it. The young man had one of those brawny legs comfortably hooked over the great foot of the statue as he talked to Jonathan, and the rest of him was sprawled on the grass. From that position, he saw Vivian before Jonathan did, and gave her a friendly wave.
"Oh, is it that late already?" Jonathan said. "Leon, this is my cousin, V.S. Meet Leon Hardy, V.S. He's from 102 Century."
Leon Hardy rose gracefully to his feet.
"Pleased to meet you, V," he said,
and smiled. Two rows of white teeth in a brown face. Vivian was rather taken aback by him. He was so like a film star.
"Isn't 100-and-something an unstable era?" she said doubtfully.
"Just after the end of the 9th, Leon told her. "The last fixed era before the depopulation. But that's not for centuries after my time. My time is busy repairing the mess left by the demise of Europe. It's a very exciting time, full of new technology, and I came here to learn all the science I could."
We'd better go, Jonathan said.
"Or Willander will throw you down all the stairs in Perpetuum," Leon said, laughing. "I heard he threatened to do that to Enkian once. Right, young Jonathan. Payment for the eyewitness account coming up. Expect to hear from me in a couple of days or so."
So that's what they were talking about, Vivian thought. She walked beside Jonathan, down the arched corridor of Continuum, wondering why it was that people you could admire perfectly well as film stars were the people you didn't quite like in real life.
"What did he mean about payment?"
she asked.
"Tell you later," said Jonathan.
Vivian looked and saw that Jonathan was walking with his most bouncing and lordly stride. "Oh, no," she thought. "He's got one of those ideas of his again. I hope he isn't going to kidnap someone else now."
Chapter 10. Ceremonies. They ran up most of the stairs of Perpetuum. It seemed to be one of those days when you are late for everything. Even with the low weight functions of their belts to help, Vivian and Jonathan threw themselves into seldom end, almost 5 minutes late. Dr. Willander sat lighting his pipe. All he did was stare at them through the smoke, but neither of them dared move or speak until he grunted,
"I see you don't intend to waste any more time making feeble excuses, at least. Sit down. Vivian, how is your translation?"
"The second part is peculiar," Vivian admitted.
"Then get on and make sense of it, while I tear a few pieces off your cousin,"
Dr. Willander growled. Vivian did her best with the translation,
while she listened to the clicking of book cubes and Jonathan's teeth crunching hair. It was very peaceful in the odd-shaped, wooden-smelling room. Too peaceful. As Vivian's breath came back, she slowly realized that Jonathan was asking almost no questions at all. Those he did ask had nothing to do with unstable eras. Vivian had a nagging feeling that something was wrong. She had no idea why Jonathan had decided not to fish for information about the Four Ages, but she thought she had better try fishing herself. If she dared, that was. She said. Dr. Willander turned his great head to look at her.
Yes?
Faced with those clever little eyes looking at her through the smoke, Vivian lost her nerve.
I don't know if this symbol means comic or old, she said.
Try antic. That means both.
Dr. Willander grunted and turned back to Jonathan. Vivian sighed and made an attempt to chew her pen function. Her teeth clacked together on nothing.
Come on, she told herself. Ask. Be cunning, or you'll never get home to Mum.
But it was no good. She was too frightened of Dr. Willander to say anything, until Dr. Willander swung his bulk round in her direction.
Now, let's have the further adventures of the blacksmith and the madly multiplying old ladies, he said.
Before you do,
Vivian said. Saying it, she felt the same jolt of fear she had felt as she touched the guardian's nearly solid arm. But she made herself go on.
Before I read it, please, could you tell me about the unstable eras? How you tell which they are, I mean, and all about them?
There. It was out. Vivian was shaking, and Jonathan was staring at what he was writing, disowning her. But she knew it was important.
Trying to put off the evil hour, are you?
Dr. Willander grunted. But he puffed placidly at his pipe and considered what to say.
Having just come from one yourself, I suppose you would be puzzled,
he remarked.
You can't tell they're unstable at all when you're living in them. You can only tell from outside, here in Time City. And it isn't only that nobody in an unstable era knows what's going to happen in their future. Nobody knows. It can differ from day to day.
He laid his pipe on his knees, clasped his fat, hairy hands around one of the huge knees.
But let's not take the era you come from. That's a terrible muddle, particularly just now. Let's take the one closer to hand. Let's look at Time City.
Time City?
Vivian exclaimed. Jonathan was so astonished that he gave up disowning Vivian and swung his chair round to join in.
But Time City isn't unstable, he said.
1 point proved, grunted Dr. Willander. You don't know it is, because you're living in it. Of course it's unstable, boy. If you could get right outside time as well as history, you'd find the city had a past and future as changeable as 20th century. What do you think is the real reason we have records of every single year of history and almost none of the city itself? Because those records wouldn't stay accurate, of course. And do you know what's going to happen in the city tomorrow? No, and nor do I.
But we do know, Jonathan protested. We know the weather, and what ceremonies are due.
Ceremonies,
Dr. Willander snarled.
They were probably invented to make people feel they knew what would happen tomorrow. Well, that's all the use I've ever seen in them. Well, maybe they had a meaning once. I grant you, that Time City is the most uneventful and stable-seeming of unstable eras. But that's all it is. We might hope for a bit of crisis, perhaps, when it comes to an end. And since it's almost worked round to its own beginning again now, that won't be long. But my guess is that it'll just peter out in some ceremony or other, with that fool Enkian complaining somebody put him too low down the order. Blah.
Did you say it's come round to its own beginning? Vivian asked.
I did. Pass me that chart,
said Dr. Willander. And when Vivian had handed the chart to him, he showed her what he meant, running his big, square-ended finger round the horseshoe from the left, where it was marked Stone Ages, and up to the right, where it said Depopulation of Earth.
The city has lasted the whole length of history, until now,
he said. His big finger stopped in the blank space between the beginning and the end of history.
Here. It's moving into the gap at this moment, where it almost certainly began. When it gets to the middle of this gap,
his finger tapped the very top of the chart,
it will probably break up. People are trying to think of ways to prevent that, of course. The trouble is, we don't know what will happen. Maybe nothing will. Or maybe it will go critical, like this 20th century you came from.
Jonathan shot Vivian a scared look.
Oh,
she said. This was not exactly what she had meant to find out, but it was worth knowing all the same.
If it goes critical, does it take the whole of history with it?
That's one of the many things we don't know,
said Dr. Willander.
There's no point in looking scared, girl. There's nothing you can do. And that's enough of that. Translation now. Skip the first bit, you'll have remembered that, and read out the rest.
Vivian sighed because the first bit was the only part that made sense, and began.
The first Time Patrol officer.
Guardian,
said Dr. Willander.
It makes a change from old ladies, I suppose. Guardian is the word.
Guardian,
Vivian read obediently.
In the Iron Age, is upon a hill, and he is a long man with an antic... Is that right? Weather... And boring shirts.
Antic nature and drab clothing, said Dr. Willander.
Which suits him in the first place,
said Vivian.
It suddenly dawned on her that she was reading a description of the very guardian they had met this morning.
She wished she could have made more sense of it.
Perhaps if it was nonsense enough, Dr. Willander might tear the paper out of her hands and read it himself. But that was not to be. No, no,
said Dr. Willander.
As befits the guardian of an early age. Go on.
Vivian was forced to go on in fits and starts, with corrections every other word from Dr. Willander, and try to make sense of it as she went. Jonathan was not even pretending to do the work Dr. Willander had set him. She could see his eyes wide behind their flicker, looking at her, past his pigtail, waiting for the next word. And to her relief, he was having the sense to write it down on a spare sheet of writing stuff as she stumbled on. He read it out to her afterwards, as they went slowly down the stairs, with Time City appearing slanted this way and that around them, and once almost over their heads.
"This is it," he said. "And the second guardian is in a sea that is dry and is all in silver, which befits an age where men create and kill in marvellous ways. I wonder why. The third guardian is young and strong, and in every way a man of the golden age. He is clothed all in green, for he lives in a forest that covers a town that was once great. And the fourth guardian goes secretly, lest any should guess where the casket of lead lies, for that is the most precious casket of all.
Oh, for time's sake, Fies, you are a fool. Why didn't you say what this was about?
Vivian fixed her eyes on the glitter of millennium, lying sideways down a green horizon.
I couldn't make head nor tail of it, she said. I had no idea it was telling how to find the caskets.
It is, but it's not telling enough, Jonathan said disconsolately. Knowing the iron casket was on a hill doesn't mean much unless you know anyway. There are about 10 seas that have been dry at one time or another. As for towns that were once great, I can think of 40 straight off, starting with Troy and ending with Minneapolis. Still, if I give Leon Hardy this, he might make something of it.
Why? What have you gone and told him? Vivian said.
Nothing, really. I was very cunning, Jonathan said. But he offered me anything I wanted in return for telling about the guardian dancing through the ceremony. So I asked him to look in records for legends about the caskets. Students can look in all sorts of sections of Perpetuum without anyone wondering what they're doing. And I thought he might just come up with where and when the polarities are hidden.
Vivian felt very dismayed. Leon Hardy might be nice enough, really, but he was quite old. Old enough not to bother about things that seemed important to people her age and Jonathan's.
I hope you told him not to tell anyone.
He understands that, Jonathan said airily, plunging down another flight of stairs which brought the dome of the years wheeling right way up. The twin domes of science now blocked the view of Millennium. And I've got him to concentrate on the ninth unstable era anyway, because he's from near then himself and knows a lot about it to start with. You see, I had a really good idea this morning in duration. I think we ought to go and warn the guardian of the last casket first, so that he can be ready long before the thief gets there. And perhaps get him to help us find the other two. But we need to find out where he is before we can do that. You can see that, can't you?
It did make sense, Vivian agreed. But she still felt uneasy. She had to remind herself that their two time ghosts in the passage showed that she and Jonathan were certainly going to do something like this, and quite safely and happily, it seemed. Then she reminded herself that Jonathan had managed to snatch her off the station in 1939 very cleverly without being found out. This was such a comforting thought that Vivian quite forgot that the whole kidnapping had been a mistake anyway. She came into the Inuit Palace with Jonathan to find that there was going to be another ceremony. The hall was littered with gold hats and jeweled shoes. Feet were hammering and voices shouting somewhere overhead. Jonathan took one look and quietly disappeared. Vivian never even noticed him go, because a crowd of people came rushing downstairs just then, with Sempiterne Walker leading the rush.
"Not that golden hat!"
Sempiterne Walker roared.
"I need the Emporic Mitre, you fool! Where the devil has someone put the Emporian cope?"
He turned and sped along the hall towards the matutinal, with everyone else pelting after him. Elio ran after the crowd, waving a frail, golden, vest-like thing. Jenny came mincing down the stairs last of all,
She was obviously part of the ceremony, too, because she was half-dressed for it in a blue and lilac gown that held her knees together and flared out at her feet. She was looking more than usually worried.
"Oh, Vivian," she said, "be kind and helpful and find him the amphoric mitre. It must be somewhere. I have to get dressed, too. This is one of the really big ceremonies, and we really daren't be late." "What does it look like?" Vivian asked. "Like a sort of golden drainpipe," Jenny said over her shoulder as she minced back up the stairs.
Vivian threw herself into the search with a will. It was much more fun than worrying about the caskets and their guardians, and it gave her a wonderful opportunity to hunt about in parts of the palace where she had not yet been. Every so often she hunted. The crowd of people rushed past, with Petula in front, waving something furry,